Welcome to Breaking Doctrine, presented to you by the Combined Arms Doctrine Directorate at the Combined Arms Center at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas. The views expressed here are those of the individual and do not represent the views of the Combined Arms Center, U.S. Army, or U.S. government.
Welcome to Breaking Doctrine, a U.S. Army Combined Arms Center podcast on emerging doctrine and the Army's vision of warfare. Hello, I'm Lieutenant Colonel Lisa Becker, and today's podcast topic is knowledge management. We'll dive into ATP 6-01.1, Knowledge Management, that was published in spring of 2024. We welcome Mr. Joe Koski, Deputy Director, Force Modernization Proponent Center, which is nested under the Mission Command Center of Excellence here at Fort Leavenworth. Mr. Mike Kitchens also joins us on today's episode. He comes from the Knowledge Management Proponent Concepts and Doctrine Branch and is ATP 6-01.1 Knowledge Management author. Gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having us.
So before we really dive into knowledge management, I'd like to talk about the cognitive hierarchy from ADP 3-13. That's our information doctrine. And I think that will give good context to the term of knowledge. Mike, could you start us off?
Yeah. Cognitive hierarchy, that's a term that's been around for quite a while, ever since I've been working in doctrine, even back in 2011, probably even before that. So it's been in 6L for the longest time, but it's been improved in the ADP 313 where they've added a little more detail and fidelity to it in terms of, you know, you go from at the very bottom of the hierarchy, it starts at the very basic level, what I call the data layer, and then there's some things you have to do with that data in order for it to become information, and then you begin to context as you move up the cognitive hierarchy. It's really about providing more context. So as you move up into the information layer, somebody has to do some analysis of that. And then as you move up into the knowledge layer, that's whenever commanders and senior folks start to apply judgment to that information in order to find out what the operational context is. So it's a very useful tool. Anytime we have conversations regarding command post operations, it's a good safety net, quite frankly, to make sure we stay on track in terms of where knowledge management fits in within the command and control construct. We operate mostly at the people layer, doing people process, the networks, and then the command post. You look at all four of the components of the command and control pillars, but I think it's fair to say that one of our primary focuses is to think about the people pillar. Because decision-making really happens at the people level. So with that, I think I've kind of provided at least some context about why we use this cognitive hierarchy and why it's such a useful tool for us. Mr. Koski has his little perspective.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. I agree. I mean, KM is about people, and it's how they interact with their environment around them, the processes that they have to use to conduct their jobs, whether that's the operations process or some other process within their functional area or the warfighting function that they're responsible for. And then also, just remember that KM is also an integrated process. So it helps with the operations process on a par with targeting, intelligence preparation of the battlefield, information collection, and risk management. So the cognitive hierarchy that both of you mentioned before is definitely, as Mike said, a safety net. It is something that at least most people have seen in the past, either through a doctoral reference or from some other outside of industry academics and those types of things.
I'm going to throw in some more doctrine from ADP 6.0 and just define knowledge management. It's the process of enabling knowledge flow to enhance shared understanding, learning, and decision-making. And I think that just flows in with what you just were talking about. That it's not at the bottom of the hierarchy. We're more towards the top of the hierarchy.
Yeah, and some folks, I mean, the circles that we deal with in the knowledge management community, just across the Army and in the joint and the multinational side of things, they look at the cognitive hierarchy, and it's not a hierarchical per se. I mean, even though they say it's a cognitive hierarchy, it's not one is better than the other. It's, as Mike said, it's a refinement. You can't get to knowledge management and decision-making without an underlying understanding of what the data and the information is telling you. And if you only make decisions at the data and information levels, you run the risk of being very reactive in nature, and you might not have all the information you need. So we try to get as much information analyzed into knowledge, so to help commanders make decisions that are more anticipatory in nature and less risk.
Yeah, and just you just read the or just talked about the definition of knowledge management, which has been around for quite a while, over 2 years. And there are a multitude of outcomes if you do KM right. But back in the early days, when we were looking for a new definition that would resonate with the operational force, yeah, we were looking for what are the key outcomes. And so that's embedded in our doctrinal definition. Knowledge management is the process of enabling knowledge flow to enhance shared understanding, learning, and decision-making. And those are some pretty power-packed words. Mm-hmm. What is shared understanding? You know, we were talking about situational understanding, which is what the commander needs to know. But does everybody else understand what's happening within the operation? And so that's one of the outcomes that we see for KM. If we're doing it right, we can improve shared understanding across the command if we do it right. Learning is an innovation are tied together. So if you look at KM in terms of doing it the way we want you to do it in doctrine, it's an aspect of continuous learning. You're always in a learning mode, no matter where you are, what you're doing, what are you learning, and then how are you continuing to improve your processes. When you take learning and continuous improving together, when you tie those two together, it creates more innovative organizations. And that's what we're really after, is to create learning organizations that are very innovative, that learn from their mistakes, learn from their things that they do well, and they continually adapt based on what they learn. That's where the knowledge term comes in.
And as we look at I might mention the outcomes in our definition, which came out about 10 years ago, like you said. Since then, like 2017, the joint community came up with a series of organizational outcomes that KM can help achieve. And that is, you tie it into achieving shared understanding through collaboration, improving decision cycle effectiveness, enhancing mission and organizational performance, and then creating agile learning organizations. So it ties very much into the definition that has been around for a little bit, but now it's codified in doctrine, especially in RATP. So
let's talk about RATP.
Yeah.
Now, what I noticed is that the name was changed. So it used to be Techniques for Effective Knowledge Management, and now it's just Knowledge Management. So I'd love to hear why you changed the name and any other big changes to the publication.
Yeah. I'd like to give you a really long, complicated answer about this, whether there's not. The nomenclature ATP, Army Techniques Publication, already tells the story. So we were really, the old publication, I think we were really trying to emphasize, we had an FM at one point, and that's about techniques as well. Techniques publication really is worried towards how you do stuff. Mm-hmm. We could talk all day long about what KM is, but I think what the field really needed was the techniques publication. So we just wanted to, in the 2015 version, we just wanted to emphasize that this is no longer an FM, it's a techniques publication.
Okay.
But now the knowledge management's been around for a while. You think it was kind of unnecessary to say it's a technique publication. It's already identified as an ATP anyway, in the upper ring end part. So not nothing really complicated on that answer. This book took a while to get written, to be perfectly honest with you, because we've learned an awful lot in the last decade, even since the 2015 publication. Things that we have been talking about endlessly that we think that the field needed to know about was not in the old techniques publication. And the old publication was more brigade-centric. We took out a lot of the brigade stuff, which is like 32 pages worth of stuff that was in there about brigade stuff. Not to say that what we were advocating at the brigade is not important. It still is very important. But the book had to focus at the division at a higher level. So having said that, the book was retooled really to apply lessons learned that we had learned over the last decade. And to be quite honest with you, for the first decade, it was about figuring out what a KMO is supposed to do while they're in the job, mm-hmm. right? And I think we did a pretty good job of figuring that out. But where we struggle with is the sustainment aspect of a KM program. So with OPTIPO and turnover in the operational force, we learned that over time, the KM program can degrade, mainly because of just natural things that are happening out there, OPTIPO and turnover of personnel. Yeah. Well, what we wanted to do on this book was to stress the theme of not only how do you build a program, but how do you sustain it. Chapter 4 is new stuff, is brand new. We even teach some of this stuff, but Doctrine hadn't caught up to it. He's like change management. If you're going to implement something large scale, you probably need to understand a little bit about change management theory and processes and procedure. And only teach that in this small house.
So is that like when we learn at CGSC, Cotter's
change model?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we have a couple different models that we teach in our KM course. The other two things which have emerged as being a really important thing for knowledge management is operating with multinational partners or even our joint partners as well. So UAP, Unified Action Partners, interoperability. So there's a section in Chapter 4 on what's the knowledge manager's role in that. If you're going to be working with distributed operations and you're working in a coalition environment, how do you get shared understanding? You know, with all the caveats and all the things that you have to deal with. So knowledge manager needs to understand those processes, things like rank from release, how that works, you know, how we make sure all of our unified action partners have access to the right information and without violating OPSEC. So that's an important piece of it. And the last piece of Chapter 4, which is something that I'm really proud of on the book, is we talked earlier about our definition about earning. Our observations has been a lot of units, organizations, large-scale organizations want to talk about learning organizations. And they say in their mission statement, they're a learning organization. Army Research Institute spent several years researching this very topic about what is a learning organization? What should one look like? What should you be doing? And so after several years of kind of paying attention to what they did, they published their finding and they recommended a definition of what a learning organization is. We were able to get that definition into this book. The Army now has an official definition based on research and a validated model on what a learning organization is. Not to make it too complicated, but like everything else, all we really did is we put, what are the five big things you need to do to be a learning organization? If you're doing those five things, you're probably headed in the right direction. Last chapter is sustaining the program. It's all about how you keep the program healthy. Measuring success is a challenge for a lot of things in the Army. If you only kill a program, all you got to do is go, how do you measure it? It's very hard to measure things when it comes to people and decision making. But what we did is we took a simple model that we came up with based on a paper that came out of War College about knowledge management maturity, meaning, you know, either if you have a program that's brand new, it's probably not very mature. On a scale of 1 to 5, 1 is they're not doing so great, they're new, or they're not doing it very well. 5 would be really, really great. And there's plenty of research out there that we use. We didn't just make this up. But we built a knowledge management maturity model that has resonated really well in the operational force. When we go out and we teach that, it's built around the four pillars of KM, people, process, tools, and the organizational structures and the culture.
Yeah, you made me think of communication. And as we go to a more dispersed environment, how much more important that communication flow is between all levels. I'd like to, is it chapter 2 that has the knowledge management 5-phase iterative cycle?
Right.
Yep. Taking this from Doctrine, it's to drive organizational improvement and create shared understanding, which we already talked about, that shared understanding piece. So can you just go back over the steps of the process? How does this nest within the military decision-making process, or how does it How does it work with the different processes that we might be more familiar with?
Yeah, so that's really your question. You could take this ADVI process and apply it to just about anything within your organization or outside your organization. So one of the things that we spend a lot of time thinking about, especially from a battle room perspective, is things like we have an ED, you have inputs and outputs, right? So we have the information that flows in, whatever the board of the working group does, and there's some kind of output. So the NBAP process is the same way. You start with input into the course of action development and doing mission analysis. We could take this ADPI process and observe the NBAP process as it's being happening, but as it's happening within an organization, and look for inefficiencies in terms of how that process is working. As we all know, NBAP is a commander-driven process. We all as staff have to be a part of that whole process. But it really relies heavily on input from different staff officers to make sure that the products that come out of the MBA process has everything that it needs. So there's some similarities there, obviously. It just has different outputs. Yeah. Obviously the MBAP process comes out with an order, and then there's decisions that are made by the commander in terms of their plan and how they're going to execute. The KM process is slightly different in that it's really not, they are designed to affect or get into the decision-making aspect. It's more about looking at the efficiency of the processes that are wide at the decision-making process. Does that make sense? It's a tool used to improve all the process within the command post. Does that help?
Yeah, it helps because, you know, when I was first reading about it before we sat down, I was thinking, oh man, another process, another thing to take up time. But this is actually meant to build efficiencies and, like we said, communication. So it should be saving you time. It's just a little bit work maybe up front.
Yeah. And again, it's a tool designed for a knowledge manager. And then the last bullet, hopefully I'm not straying from your question about the process itself and the maturity model. It's a tool for you to use internally. It's not like big armies coming in to do this assessment.
Right.
It's something that the knowledge manager does organically, right? So they work for you as a commander. That's their job, is to start looking across the environment and trying to determine where things are not working. And if the commander has a thing that it's been bugging them, turn to the knowledge manager and say, I'm not getting the information I want. Figure it out why. Come back and give me some courses of action. So it's a tool for knowledge managers to improve processes, which is what you already talked about just now.
And some listening might say, well, we already have Lean Six Sigma and continuous process improvement, so how is this different from that? So we've had several black belts come through our course and said that this is maybe not the missing piece, but it is a piece that they knew was missing from their swing when they were looking at either Lean Six Sigma or Baldrige or some of the other change management processes or systems that are out there. It is, you know, if you look at Lean Six Sigma proper, it is about improving efficiencies to some sort of a process, some sort of inputs and outputs, looking at lean, you know, try to take out non-value-added steps and those types of things. But the KM piece or the ADPI portion of that is looking at from the human perspective, how does that affect, how do these changes you're trying to make to this process affect the human and how they go about their business? If we're going to talk about data, we talk about problem framing and then coming up to a solution. Not all solutions require a full up major weapon system. It could be something simple. I have to change how my people are organized in my organization. I have to change their skill sets. I have to change the process steps and how things sort of work out, or I have to change the tools that I'm using. If they're not allowed to change the tools, okay, that's something we now, do we know how to use it to? Do we have the right business rules? Do we have the right use cases for how our organization actually runs? So that's where the knowledge management piece comes in, that is different and complementary to either CPI or Lean Six Sigma and MDMP.
Mike, you mentioned, kind of responsibilities for the KM through the ADP process. Now, What are the commander's responsibilities? What are the staff responsibilities in this whole process? What should they be focusing on? So, because I don't think this should just be, this should not just be KMs or KMOs.
Yeah. One of the things we like to compare KM to is safety. So everybody is a safety officer.
Mm-hmm.
And so part of our messaging in KM is that everybody's a KM person. Everybody in the command has a role from the lowest soldier all the way up to the commander. So what we want the commander to do is to be a champion. Be a champion for this process. You know, you talked earlier about, oh, God, here's another process. Here's another thing we got to do. Commanders are busy. And, you know, we don't want to silo them with some other thing that they have to do. That's why we put it on the shoulders of the knowledge managers. The knowledge manager's job to do that. So what we really want from a commander is just be a champion. You know, implementing change can be hard sometimes. And if you do the ADPI process the way we want you to do in doctrine, it's going to drive change. You're always going to find something that's not working well. You're always going to find something. And like I said, the new definition of what a learning organization is that you adapt to what you learn. You know, there are organizations out there that are not so great at doing that, but there are organizations out there in the Army that are really good at it. You know, they go through a thing, an event, and they go through their AAR process, and then they immediately start working on the fixes for that. So that's the mark of a good learning organization, is that they adapt to change based on what they learn.
Mike, chapter 3 was lessons learned, so common problems that you were seeing within organizations across the Army. Could you talk about some of those common problems and the solutions associated with them?
Yeah, the first one is that we're, you know, battle rhythm is, we see the battle rhythm as being the engine that kind of drives data, information, and knowledge flow. I mean, if you, especially if you look at the division headquarters or core headquarters, I mean, there's a lot of battle rhythm events. And NCTP and call and some of their lessons learned frequently talk about some of the lessons learned out of there is units failing to build a critical path. And what is a critical path? I mean, in order to have this meeting, you're going to have X information to be the intel, to have a targeting working group. It could be a variety of different things that you need for your targeting working group, lethal, non-lethal targets. So that's one of the things that we talk a lot about is one of the common problems. And we see the solution, which has been around for quite a while, quite frankly, even back whenever I was in captain, I was introduced to this idea of battle rhythms and 7-minute drills and, you know, how do you think through your meeting? You know, what's the required information that needs to come to the meeting in order to get the output that you need? And more importantly, or just as importantly, do we have the right people at the meeting? Probably the second biggest that I think we validated in some of our research that we've done over the years is content management. Content management is a challenge. It's rocket science sometimes. It's figuring out, you know, what's the best way to name your products? Are they where people can get to them? Do people have the right access? Where is it? Where is it located? Content management is about making a deliberate effort to organize information where people can get to it and use it in a timely manner. So those are two. I can keep going.
No, that's great. I like to talk about our allies and partners being part of the ATP because we will be operating with allies and partners. So can you talk about that chapter?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, it's chapter 4. It's one of the subsessions of chapter 4. You know, honestly, my main goal and when I wrote that piece of it was, you know, if you don't have experience working in a multinational environment, then you know, you have to just at least have some basic foundational understanding of what internal interoperability means. And so my goal really was to just give a basic foundation of that, of what interoperability means, the you know, different levels of it. You know, when do you know someone is fully interoperable? You know, there's the human side of that thing. There's the informational side. Then there's the procedural side of it. And a lot of times what we do is we find ourselves having to do workarounds in a multinational environment because our tools may not talk to each other. I don't really care for that term, but they can't communicate with each other. We have to do workarounds and so forth. So I think if a knowledge manager has a good understanding of what we mean by interoperability, then they'll be a little more versed in what their role would be. Is who do they need to reach out to? First person I think of is the foreign disclosure officer because of all the caveats that are out there. So your next question is going to be, what have we done to solve that? And Mr. Kosky can talk at nauseam about this idea about international information sharing standards, which is the program that we're in with the AFCANs and NATO, where we actually meet and we talk about, you know, as a coalition, how are we going to communicate? And they actually produce documents that say, this is how we're going to do it, right? So the solution to that problem is to have a set of information sharing standards that everybody agrees to when you go into an operational environment. So as a part of the ATP, one of the appendices that I put into the annex, the knowledge management annex, is do you have your international information sharing standards available for everybody? Because we've seen it before where they go into an exercise where people didn't know that they existed. Now we need to make sure that they know about those information sharing standards. So I think that's probably a big piece of how, what we've done in KM to get better at interoperability. So beyond that, that's probably Joe's thing, because he travels all over the world meeting with NATO partners to be able to come up with those, actually help co-write some of those information sharing standards.
Thanks for the lead in, Mike. From the ABCANs, or at least the five English-speaking nations that are part of that, we will work towards getting better at talking to each other. You know, I guess the joke, I think Mr. Creed has said, and others have, you know, we're five nations separated by a common language. So but from a interoperability and a knowledge management perspective, information sharing standards, there are three information and knowledge management standards that are in ABCANs. One's on policy, one's on design, and one's on training. And all of those are very much steeped in Army doctrine. Of course, the other coalition partners have their doctrinal references and ways of doing business. But for the majority of those three standards, the U.S.'s position has been pretty much adopted, particularly on the training side. We talked about the knowledge management maturity model. That maturity model has been adopted and ratified by our Five Eyes partners as a way to look at how they look at themselves, either in exercises or preparation for operations. You know, as Mike said, the caveats that are in there, the security classification guides that allow us to tell one thing to one nation and not to another. But we don't really run into that with Five Eyes. But if you go Five Eyes Plus or NATO Plus, then you definitely get into some of these caveats that you have to be very, it's definitely much like three-dimensional chess to get information across and through. And that's where knowledge management, if not the person, but at least the function, is very much critical to ensuring that we get information to a flow across within, with and through our nations.
The last question I have for you guys is, we're in this world of machine learning and artificial intelligence. So what's the future for Army KM? How do Army knowledge management practitioners fit into this space?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So I think one of the implied tasks for a knowledge manager is to look to the future and try to figure out what's coming. Well, AI is not coming. It's already here.
Right.
So, you know, we've accepted that. So what we're doing over at the proponent is trying to visualize what the role of a knowledge manager. We clearly have a role, because if you go back to the cognitive hierarchy, you ask the question, where should this AI stuff fit in? And so you could argue down at the data level where information is collected and curated and eventually put in a package where somebody can analyze. That's where is a starting point where we think AI fits in. How do we leverage this new technology as a tool? We see it as a tool to get to a higher level of understanding. So I think it's still not quite mature enough to put into doctrine yet. I think there's a lot of people that's using it in a lot of different ways, but KM certainly has a role in it. We think that there's a good opportunity for us to work with some of the other staff, like the URSA folks. They live in the data world.
Right.
So we might think that there's some possibility for us to kind of share some responsibility with how we employ those AI tools to do better data analytics. So our role in it is yet to be determined as a true learning organization. The more we learn about it, the more we're going to try to shape how it's used.
And why are we into this data literacy thing? Because everybody has to be able to work with data, understand it, play with it, and be able to visualize it. So just, you know, those types of things. And then another role would be an organization change manager. We talked the KM process is about affecting change, and then process improvement, which is across the board. So as we, and I'm going to tie this all back to the cognitive hierarchy again, if you look at the data and information tiers, so mm-hmm. to speak, those are very conducive to having systems and AI and those types of things sort of generate, you know, you set up an automations tool, you set up some sort of generative AI, something that can do senses and feeds and triggers and look at those types of things, very sensor driven, and systems can do that. And then the knowledge and decision is very people focused. You have to get some sort of gray matter against that. Some cognitive, you know, systems can do logic, but systems can't do judgment.
Great.
So that's sort of how we talk about people versus systems. And then at some point in time, you can automate some of those decisions based off reps and sets, understanding the process inside and out. And if AI can generate a solution that we can trust, and that goes back to trust, of, you know, using from a data perspective the voltage, which is visible, accessible, understandable, linked, trusted, interoperable, and secure. Those help on the data characteristics of how that gets curated and where it came from and whether or not there was bias in incorporated into it. Was there misinformation, disinformation tied to it? All those types of things that very smart people are working on. And not to say whether it's smart people too, but very in-depth discussions on that and responsible use of AI, ethical decisions, all types of things. So the systems at the information and data level can implement and enforce those rules that we've set in place, that people have set in place. And then people now can integrate and iterate and design and ideate on cognitive things, those wicked problems that AI probably can't solve.
That's great. Anything that we missed that you'd like listeners to know about?
Well, I'll just go on the drumbeat. Last but not least, KM is about people and how they interact in their environment. And the knowledge management process is an integrating process that is part of the operations process that helps people with decision-making, just like targeting, intelligence preparation, the battlefield, information collection, and risk management.
Last but not least, there are going to be better building learning organizations. It's just now that we have a methodology or at least a framework on what that's supposed to look like, I think that's a great step forward for us as an Army.
Yeah, I learned a lot today. Thanks for joining us on Breaking Doctrine, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Just like writing new doctrine is a team effort, Breaking Doctrine takes a team. Without the Kerwin Special Doctrine Division here at CAD, we wouldn't be able to bring you this show. Our production is coordinated by Mr. Ted Crisco, and our editing and sound is provided by Mr. Zarek Fry from 29 Pixel Studios. Please don't forget to subscribe on Amazon Music, Apple, Odyssey, Audible, Spotify, or YouTube. Also, go ahead and follow us on social media at U.S. Army Doctrine to get updates on new podcasts, Doctrine Digest videos, and publications. Finally, the views and opinions expressed in this podcast do not necessarily reflect the official position of the United States Army, the U.S. Army Training and Doctrine Command, or the Combined Arms Center. I'm Lieutenant Colonel Lisa Becker, and this has been Breaking Doctrine.